time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is October 19, 2020. You know what this day is? It's convention day. Virtual convention day starts here in about 30 minutes. The MBA will be kicking off their first ever annual virtual conference, obviously because of COVID and making sure everyone stays safe. But anyway, looking forward to hearing about that next week. We'll talk about that. We're going to have Dawn Williams, one of my favorite people there at the MBA. There's so many favorites there. So she's just one of them. Really sweet, coming on and talking to us about the conference next week. And then we're going to start a whole series of what technology has been announced at this conference that is going to help you in underwriting loans faster, improving your service. So you're going to want to stay tuned to a lot of the podcasts that are coming up here. Very exciting. So good to have you here as our listeners. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. That's why we kind of stay in an audio format, keep flirting with video, but most people say don't bother. Stay with the audio only. In the Hot Topics segment today, we've got a good friend of mine, David Norris, who is CEO. He's a cyclist, an investor, a board member, an advisor, and a serial entrepreneur. We're going to be talking about what you could do to impact companies, what he is doing, and what others like David are doing, and myself are doing, to have a high impact. So we're talking with him about coaching, and he has extensive experience in governance as well as a wide range of boards and committees. So talking about executive coaching and making a difference. So David's a good friend, and we'll introduce him a little bit more, get a little more background on him later in the Hot Topics segment. We're proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate, industrysyndicate.com, list of where you can see all so many great podcasts out there. Encourage you to check it out. Also, check out mortgagemedia.com, great place to find out what's happening in other aspects. So they serve two different audiences, and I encourage you to check out both of those websites, which has other podcasts and information. Special thank you to our sponsors, Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Be sure to check out the interview we did with Marina Walsh on September 14, 2020. Talked about the margins that were going on in the industry. She and Michael will be presenting, Michael Fratantoni will be presenting tomorrow at the virtual conference, and can't wait to get the updated statistics of what's going on. There's just always one of those to go. I'd love to sit down and talk to you, but I got to go listen to Marina and Michael. So they're going to be presenting tomorrow. So if you're not registered, still not too late to register for the conference. Also, I want to say a special thank you to Finastra, whose Fusion Mortgage Bot solution automatically addresses compliance issues while delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction. Be sure to check out the program on August 24th, my birthday. Steve Hogue joined us on the podcast. We did an interview talking about data, where some of the growth, where the technology is growing to, and from their perspective by Steve. So great stuff there. Also, Lenders One, I listened to Justin DeMolia's interview that we did on June 1st, 2020, and great interview, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these collaboratives create competitive advantages for the lender and vendor members. And then also, we had Michael Jones on September 21st with CMLA, the Community Mortgage Lenders Association of America. Had him on as a guest. We're grateful for their partnership. And then also, August 31st, we had Linda Bomar and then Narayan from Indicom talking about how they offer outsourcing and compliance solutions for every stage of the mortgage cycle. They do some amazing things, especially with some of the intelligence, AI, machine learning, got into a lot of that. Incelerate, this company helps lenders close more loans, engaging better with borrowers and prospects. Be sure to check out the interview on August 17th with Josh Friend. And then also, we have an updated interview September 7th, 2020, Ainsworth discussion that we had on the website there at theainsworthadvisors.com, as well as AI Assist, as well as Celebrity Home Loans and Novient, which really does so much to help you optimize your mortgage executions, as well as Knowledge Coop, Mobility RE, Modex, Velma, VendorSurf, Vidyard, many more. Check out all of our sponsors up on our sponsorship page. So grateful to have them help make this podcast possible. And of course, we special thank you every week to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Matt for their contributions. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's Mortgage Minute. Rob, what you have for us, my friend?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA submitted comments supporting FHFA's proposed rule to extend the current GSE affordable housing goals by 1 year to allow for a better assessment of the economic landscape. With the COVID-19 pandemic in mind, MBA believes that it is appropriate to maintain the current requirements for another year to gather data before establishing the next set of three-year goals. FHFA will review the public comments and publish a final rule on the GSE's affordable housing goals in the coming weeks. Also last week, MBA submitted a letter to Senators Moran and Sheehan thanking them for introducing S-4670, the Preserving Equity on Main Street Act. The bill would provide a temporary bridge to commercial real estate borrowers that could be utilized even where existing loan agreements do not permit a borrower to take on additional debt. The bill follows a similar effort, H.R. 7809, the HOPE Act, which was introduced in July and aims to provide temporary liquidity to CRE borrowers affected by the pandemic. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Rob Van Rapphorst. Check out the website, MBA.org, Mortgage Bank Association. Also want to recommend that you get sign up on your smartphone to get and become a member of the Mortgage Action Alliance, MAW, Mortgage Action Alliance. Search that on your phone so that you can have your voice heard. You do not have to be a member of the MBA. Have your voice heard on the Hill. They do such a great job of representing us. We're so grateful for that partnership. Les Parker's here with the updated TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. I can't wait to see what play on words that they have out here. So that's what you got for us, right?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Bonds going back to Beirut. Another day, another door, another high, another low. Rates bottom.
I'm going back to my roots.
Have rates bottomed? It was another up and down week in a topsy-turvy world. U.S. stocks continue to wiggle over the magnitude and timing of economic support to businesses and individuals. The momentum shifts to Trump due to the documented evidence of Biden's corruption. As the story grows, expect the fixed income markets to price a stronger recovery and resurgence of inflation than it had priced previously. It's made bonds lose its bull trend. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter. Bonds going back to bare roots.
Good song. I like that. That's a good job. I always love how Les mixes in lyrics of a popular tune in with his forecast. Check out all of his forecasts at tmspotlight.com to subscribe to Les's free newsletter. But also you can get that paid version by inputting in the word power and check it out. Very good. Matt Graham's got a market update. So glad to have Matt and the service. If you have not checked out MBSLive.net. You need to do so. I've got it here on my screen, always behind me. Anyone's on a Zoom call, they go, oh, what's the markets doing? I see you got MBS Live up in the background. I do. I have it always going. Good service. I love it. So let's get Matt's update for this week.
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Last week was a week of consolidation and counterattack for bonds. What did they have to counterattack against? That would be the previous week's breakout of a very narrow trading range in Treasury yields and the bond market in general. 0.72 had been a ceiling for 10-year yields for several months, arguably with one small breakout in late August. And the range had been getting narrower and narrower heading into 3 weeks ago. Then 2 weeks ago, the attack, if you will, bond yields broke up and out of that range from 0.72 all the way up to roughly 0.8 at times. And this 0.8, 0.79 pivot point is a ceiling that will come into play again soon, very likely. But more on that in a moment. Last week was the counterattack against that breakout of 0.72. Yields moved nicely lower to start the week, and it looked for a moment as if we might be able to get back into that previous nice low narrow range under 0.72. But despite several attempts at that, bonds weren't able to make it under 0.72 and actually visibly bounced several times. And when we see that from a technical standpoint, when a ceiling or a previous ceiling turns into a floor and then acts like a floor and rates bounce on that, it can be a little bit of a disconcerting technical sign. Technicals aside, we actually saw on Friday the return of some rather clear-cut correlation between economic data and movement in the bond market. And that's not something that we have been able to rely on very much recently. I'm talking about retail sales coming in at 1.9 versus forecasts of 0.7. And then core retail sales, the component that strips out some of the more volatile components, came in at 1.4 versus 0.2 expectations. That number had actually been negative last month. So this is a surprisingly strong showing for retail sales growth, and bond markets were clearly willing to react on Friday morning. And that simply reinforced this bounce up and away from 0.72. In other words, the counterattack made a nice showing, but it ultimately failed, and last week ultimately confirmed a move up from that previously narrow range. Is that the end of the world? Definitely not. 0.79 in the longer term has been a ceiling that goes back many months and is arguably the post-COVID ceiling, with the exception of early June when yields went all the way up to 0.96. Are we going to break 0.79 and head back up to 0.96? That's really a debate that's central to rate strategists right now. And there's a lot of speculation on how soon it could happen, if it will happen, and what would cause it to happen. So before we get ahead of ourselves on that, let's talk about what's coming up this week. In terms of economic data, it's a very light week, and we really only have the housing-related reports coming out, with only a few exceptions. Today, NAHB homebuilder confidence is already out. Again, a record high, 2 points higher than last time. Of course, builders are happy because inventory among existing home sellers continues to be very low. People want to move to the suburbs. Builders build in the suburbs. It's a great time to be a builder. Housing starts is tomorrow. That's expected to be similarly balmy, not a record high by any means, but definitely continuing to operate at levels that are much higher than they were for the past several years. Wednesday with us, as always, is MBA's application data. That's a every week report as opposed to an every month report. And then on Thursday, we do have existing home sales forecast to come in at 6.3 million. That would be an improvement from the previous post-crisis high, which was last month, and it would be not anywhere near the pre-crisis highs, which were seen in 2005 when it was all the way up to 7.23 million. Some might argue at an unsustainable pace at the time. So the bounce back in existing home sales, notwithstanding all the stuff I just said about builders and new homes, has also been nothing short of impressive. It doesn't have the same bragging rights as being able to say it's at an all-time high, but it's a lot higher than a lot of people thought it would be at this stage in the recovery. In terms of threats ahead for bonds and financial markets in general, there is a lot to consider and discuss with respect to stimulus and the presidential election. I think we can talk more about the election probably next week. I will just say for today that there's a wide difference of opinion, and I think cases could be made either way. And we also want to consider who ends up controlling House and Senate. As far as stimulus is concerned, that's the biggest existential threat to the bond market right now, mainly because treasuries are used to pay for the thing and because stimulus does stuff to the economy that is bad for treasuries. It encourages investors to shift to riskier assets like stocks. It can help the economy. It can support higher rates by making the economy stronger. And it can drive inflation, which is also ultimately going to be bad for rates. All of that, plus it takes treasuries to pay for the thing, meaning higher treasury supply and supply-demand 101. Although the things being equal, higher supply is going to equal lower prices and higher yields. It's a double whammy for treasuries, and obviously something that is a big component of why rates are as high as they are, even though they're not high, right? But they would be much lower if all of the existing realities were in place, taking away stimulus. So why aren't rates moving higher already? Simply put, they know stimulus is coming. They just don't know when or how big it's going to be. So all of the time that can pass between now and then is just going to be slightly better for treasuries than if stimulus were happening right now and if it were huge, because it's doing more incremental damage to the economy and it's giving the bond market that much more time without having to cope with massive amounts of new issuance. Either way, I think people should be prepared for the possibility of rates to move higher before they move lower, but ultimately it will depend on the path of the pandemic. So if things get bad into the winter, we can definitely retest some lower range boundaries. But if things go surprisingly better than expected, then we shouldn't be surprised to see rates continue to move higher.
Yeah, I kind of the opinion we could see things going better than expected. A lot of interesting things going on. It's interesting that it was noted about where we stand with the election potential outcome here. So a lot of optimism going towards we're going to have another 4 years of Trump. For those of you who don't like him, I'm sorry. That's just it's a bummer. So good to have the report from Matt. Appreciate that. Also, when you enter in to sign up free trial, if you put LOLs for Lickin' on Lending, LOL, you will get the trial extended for another 2 weeks. So check it out. Alice Alvey, so good to have you here, Alice. Appreciate you, all that's going on. And I know you're anxious to get off and into listening to the opening speeches on the MBA. So I appreciate you joining us now for a quick update. Alice is CMB, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. And she's here with this week's legislative update. What you got?
Hi, Dave. Hello, everybody. Yes, I am super excited to see how MBA does this. It looks well thought out. I mean, when you look at the agenda, you feel like you're going to the same old conference. And the best part is I didn't have to get on a plane and pack like three sets of clothes for every day. So I love that. But it looks great. So I encourage everyone to try and get in there and participate. This is our new world. And as we all know, a lot of companies are already really thinking that January is not a reality to get back to work into the offices. And even schools and lots of companies are already thinking we're into the spring. So how many of you out there really thought that back last March when everyone had to race to go work from home, if someone would have said to you, you'd be there a year minimum, would you have believed them? So I'm all for lots of big planning. And what I'm going to listen for during this MBA event is I want to hear what they're saying about GSE conservatorship and getting them out of that, really trying to understand the impact of COVID and what they see as the impact for 2021. I don't know about everybody else, but I'm tired of 30-day extensions of the COVID underwriting guidelines, right? Give us 60 or 90 days for crying out loud since everyone's working from home. That impacts some states with licensing. And just listening overall for some guideline announcements. We find the agencies like to announce certain things at this event. So they've got all the big speakers, and I'll let you all have the update next week. As far as what's pending right now, just a heads up, HUD's Disparate Impact Rule was a final rule back on September 24th, and its effective date is October 26th. So next week, just a heads up, this actually made life a lot easier from a fair lending standpoint, where we had a lot of issues with trying to document the burden. Where did the burden lie to be able to test for fair lending? So this rule gave a lot of illustrations, actually gave some better guidance. So that goes into effect October 20th. One other quick note, HUD's Forbearance Mortgagee Letter 2020-30, that goes into effect also in 2 weeks from now. So make sure you've got everything understood. That's another thing I'm hoping we find out at the MBA conference. We usually get some good information in our FHA subcommittee to find out what FHA is going to do related to purchases of forbearance. So if my borrower was in forbearance on their current home and now they're going to buy a new one, we need a little clarity on that guidance as well. The only bill that's out there, folks, or even a rule open for comment while Congress is out campaigning, there was a new bill that was introduced a few weeks ago that we should be adding a question to the 1003 on whether someone has had or is in the military service. So I doubt anybody's changing the 1003 after we've been 2 years in limbo. We are all planning. Actually, the agencies have pilots starting now. Other lenders are starting soon in November here and getting ready for over the next couple of months with the new 1003. So I'll be reporting on that as well. The official date is March 1st for everybody, but we've got lots of lenders kicking the tires on it right now. So we'll keep you updated. Hopefully it won't be too painful as we've had plenty of time to prepare. So that's my update for now, Dave. I'll pass it back to you and have a wonderful day.
Good. Thank you so much. I wish you could stay with us for the interview, but I know how excited you are to attend. So I know you're going to sign off at this point, but thanks so much for joining us and look forward to seeing you at the conference virtually. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
The conference. I look forward to your report next week. Appreciate it. Alan Pollock would normally be here. I want to talk just briefly about some things that Alan and I are planning. It's really exciting. We're working on a Tech Stack podcast. We're going to be talking more about technology and the things that are enabling it. We're forming a whole new podcast related to that. We've talked about that. It's really going to happen. One way or another, we are going to be doing a technology podcast. If you're interested in advertising on that, we'd love to talk to you. You should go to our website, check it out there. But Bill Farmakist and his team represent that podcast as well. And we'll be out there and at the conference talking about that. So be looking forward to hearing your feedback and also your suggestions, what you would like to see discussed on Tech Stack Radio, where we're talking about the technology stack that's in every company and growing. So much to talk about. But it ends this week's update. And now for you who are listening live, you just stay right here, because we're going to get right into the Hot Topic segment. Now, if you're listening to this on a downloaded basis, stay tuned. You're going to just be able to listen to the next podcast, because that's what we're going to get into right now. Excited to have the Hot Topic this week, and I'm going to be talking about one of my favorite topics with one of my favorite people, David Norris, who is CEO, who is a cyclist, an investor, a board member. He's an advisor, a serial entrepreneur. He has founded and built companies in a number of industries and has extensive fundraising experience, has raised over $500 million from venture capital, private equity, and strategic angel advisors. And so we're going to be talking about executive coaching. I first met David when he was at a Happy State Bank, and we're going to get into a little bit of his background, but I want to welcome David Norris. David, good to have you here, friend.
David, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you very much for having me. This is one of my favorite topics as well, leadership and executive coaching. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited about you being here. And first of all, let people get to know you. Who is David Norris? I've got to start with a Semper Fi. Thank you for your service in the Marine Corps and your little bit of your journey, and let our listeners get to know you.
Well, you know, it's funny how I landed where I landed in banking, because I started out as an animal science major at Texas A&M University, but my main goal there was to enter the Marine Corps, which I became a Marine officer and was a Marine infantry officer for 5 years. And I say tongue-in-cheek, but there's also a lot of truth to it, that everything I ever needed to know about the banking business, I learned as a grunt in the Marine Corps. It's all in the relationships and in the leadership that we display. But, you know, I left the Marine Corps as our daughter was born, and landed in banking and was in that for 35 years, 25 as chief operating officer of Happy State Bank out of Happy, Texas, the town without a frown.
A town without a frown. I love that. It was a great company. It was such a joy to work with you there and your mortgage division. We consulted to you and helped in a number of areas, myself and Kathy Thomas. We worked together on that. It was really great, but it's developed a lasting friendship. And one of the reasons is you started saying, Dave, have you read this book? And one of my favorite books that you introduced me to is In a Pit on a Snowy Day with a Lion. And I've now become one of my favorite authors. And you've always been an inspiration to me and making me aware of books. And I think everything you've done, David, has been bringing you to what I think is your calling and your real purpose. And that's what you're doing today. So tell our listeners, what is it that you're doing today?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for doing that. It's one of those things that when I've heard it said by Steve Harvey that your career is what you're paid for, but your calling is what you're made for. I had that realization some years ago that, you know, even though I was working for a wonderful, wonderful company with great core values, very employee-centric, very customer-centric, but there was still a calling to do something else. And when you realize your purpose, mine being to be the absolute best version of myself so that I can teach and empower others to have the business and live the life that they love living, is that when that calling comes out, the desire to spread one's own entrepreneurial wings to develop a leadership coaching business was absolutely transformational for me. Had to transcend a few things in the process, but I absolutely love my time with my clients. And it's been very good for me.
And I can't wait to get into it. It was so obvious that you had a passion to help people because of all the books you're recommending and giving away. But the reality is that when you find your passion, you find your purpose. And we quickly all saw your passion, that is to help people and lift them up. You've gotten become a certified coach. Talk a little bit about that. Just, I think, an importance of that.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. It is to really get into the content of leadership or coaching to help one transform into the context of leadership development and how that can actually apply. I mean, coaching is so much more than say, here, read this book or
right.
here through this content. Coaching is about in any industry to really drill down deep and find out what's going on. It's much like golf, which people say is, you know, golf is a game of inches, the 6 inches between your ears. That's what executive coaching, leadership development coaching is. This is about getting inside and finding out what matters most to people and then how to focus, gain clarity around it, and transform themselves and therefore transform the business that they operate in and transform the enterprise that they lead.
Yeah, it's so true. And I tell you, one of the great honors that I have, because you're invited into a special place in people's lives, and they're coming to you for a lot of reasons. And let's get into that. What are some of the reasons why people reach out to you to retain you as their executive coach?
Well, thank you for asking that. That's a great question. A lot of times it's they've heard something somebody said or something that even I said that I'm going to say a resilient note in their heart. Or that they know that they have a longing around something in their company, or they have a discontent with the situation going on in their lives or with their company. And then something that I say or something that somebody refers them to me is to where we can really drill down deep as to what that is and come to the awareness. I call it shining the light of awareness on a problem, which, by the way, David, the problem is never the problem. The problem is always in the thinking about the problem. Now we're getting creative. Now we get the imagination, God-given image-making faculty going to come through any fact of life, like COVID-19 is a fact of life, nothing we can do about it, or fixing a problem inside the company because there's something shared in that and people believe that they're not stuck and that there is something they can do. Even if it's baby steps. And I like to say you can climb Mount Everest taking baby steps, but you still have to take a step.
Yeah. You talk oftentimes about there's a coach and there's a master coach. And what does it take to become a master coach? And what do you mean by that?
That's a great question, because the role of coaching in general across the country, actually around the world, coaching itself was long thought to be something to correct underperformance. But people now today, you know, leaders consider the hiring of coaches to be essential, much like professional athletes. Well, they'll have skill coaches as well, weight training coaches, and they'll also have mindset coaches around that. But coaching in business is now used to support top producers and to generate immediate results, especially in times of change and challenges in situations when you're pursuing new opportunities. But unfortunately, what has happened because the coaching industry has grown so much in the last 10 years, the demand for coaching is creating a supply of fresh, inexperienced coaches, minimal training, and hide that fact behind fancy websites and ads, which leads many people to hire coaches who can't really help them. So finding a master coach takes effort. You've got to know what to look for so you can tell the experts apart from the ones who really lack the necessary training and skill and experience. And so when that happens, the investment of time and energy doesn't pay the exponential dividends, just like a professional athlete's career can be transformed by the right coach. Having a master coach in your corner can actually make you millions of dollars that I believe first works unceasingly on themselves first. You know, I'm always open to new ideas, philosophies, and I actually participate in specialized training for coaches several times a year. I study coaching. I take coaching seriously. And I totally care about the person across from me or on the phone or I'm on a Zoom call with, because that's what it is really all about. Now, David, I'm not shy at all about claiming to be a master coach. I constantly seek to get better so I can help you or anyone become who you want to become more quickly with less effort. But my time as an officer in the Marine Corps or chief operating officer of a bank or running my own coaching business, you know, none of that alone is sufficient, I'm going to say, for my claim of mastery. But when you combine my investments, and I'm talking about anybody else that would be a master coach as well, when you combine my investments and my experience with visible results, enjoy the clients and the clients' employees,
right.
You know, to work tirelessly to coach over the past 40 plus years. I think you can see when you've helped countless people to achieve what they deeply desire in their business, in their lives. So when it comes to choosing coaches that I use for, one, I want to make sure that they care deeply about people, especially me. I want to make sure that they have incredibly high personal standards and ambitions, and they also have a high level of self-knowledge. Now, there's some more things, but that would be the first, the top three things right there.
That's good. And what one of our listeners just wrote me a quick question. What's the difference between coaching and consulting? I know there is a difference, but if you could have David expound on that.
Oh, that is a great question, because, you know, one of the myths that leaders need to know about coaching is that they say that a coach must be an expert in a certain industry. And actually, nothing could be further from the truth. If you hire an industry expert to coach you, all you're really going to do is get the best practices for your industry.
Right.
That's consulting right there.
Right. Yeah, to come in and work with you as a consultant because of things that you wanted to do with the mortgage division. You wanted to take it to another level, some things you wanted to see change.
I have clients in oil and gas, wind energy. I mean, president of a seminary, heavy duty truck parts distribution center, pivot irrigation, sprinklers. You know, my clients will have anything from crude oil to cow manure on them. But the thing is, coaching is never about the company widget. It's never about the company service or product. Coaching is about you as a leader. It's about people in your organization. It's about your organization. It's about your vision. It's about what you're thinking and where you want to go.
Yeah. There's so many aspects about this. Coaching is vastly different than consulting. The two can flip back and forth. I'm both a coach and a consultant. I bring my industry expertise and then I bring my coaching. But I think there's a clear delineation. I'm doing a better job as I do so to separate, okay, now we're getting into coaching here, and then we're getting into consulting here. And so that the boundaries are not blurred in their mind as we're working on that. I looked this up, and there's a great search. If you go 5 reasons why you should have a coach, and one of them is to increase clarity and focus. And I know that's one of the things you and I talk about regularly is, so talk about the importance of clarity and focus.
Yeah, I'm going to say the lack of clarity and focus is a pandemic right now. I actually call it the pandemic of personal disorganization. And clarity and focus is a discipline. It is not something that you can buy off a shelf or anything like that. It is about really becoming clear on what it is you would love. Yes. And let me put it in the terms of accountability. You know, there's a difference between responsibility and accountability. You're responsible for things, but you're accountable to people. And as Sam Silverstein would say, when you're in the accountability zone, what you start really focusing and getting clear on what matters most. In other words, doing the right thing, doing things right and doing the right things.
Right.
And identifying the activities that support that. So put it another way, that in doing the right things, you are accountable for identifying your strategic intent, business goal, mission, purpose, personally, professionally, whatever. You're accountable for identifying that strategic intent and the activities that support that.
Right.
And learning to be able to put aside everything else to include what the Buddhists call the jumping monkey in your head. There's a lot of distractions. You're like a juggler and you got 5 or 6 or 7 glass balls and you dang sure don't want to drop any of them. There is a way when you become very, very clear as one of the most powerful questions a coach can ask or that a person can ask of himself or herself is that what would you love? And just really, really bearing down on, you know, how do I make my business more profitable, but also spend quantity and quality time with my children? Or in my case, grandchildren, and to really home in on what matters most. David, this is getting in line with what your personal core values are as much as anything else, what you value the most. And that right there is a big thing that I have seen across the various industries of which I have clients in, is they kind of know what they value most, but they've never spent a lot of time on it. And so when we become clear and focused, amazing things have happened. You know, look at the example of a magnifying glass and sunshine. Sunshine by itself, you can warm, but you take a magnifying glass and focus the sun's light on your hand or your arm, you're going to burn yourself. I mean, that's the power of focus right there.
That is so good. Do you find it surprising the number of people that lack clarity about who they are, their purpose? And I think one of the things that bringing clarity and focus is that what you're called to do. And I loved what you said earlier about the calling versus a career. A career is what you do. Your calling is your purpose. And so bring that into clarity for us. What I'm trying to say or communicate.
That's
so much.
Sometimes, David, sometimes it really takes, I'm going to say, a DEFCON 4 situation to wake people up as to what's going on. This pandemic has shaken a few things out. What was it, 40 years ago today, the greatest stock market crash, October 9th, Black Monday? Exactly. Sometimes it takes external things like that to really get people. Another very powerful question that a leader really must ask themselves is, who am I? Who am I as a man? Who am I as a woman? Who am I as a leader? Who am I? Because when you can answer that essential question as to who you are as a leader, who you are will determine your leadership potential and therefore the trajectory of the company that you or the enterprise that you lead. So in other words, it's another way of recognizing, coming to grips that there is a lid on your leadership. That would be from John Maxwell's 21 Years of the Law, the Law of the Lid. And that is that we all have a lid on our leadership, and it takes a conscious effort to raise that lid on yourself to increase your own leadership capacity and therefore the leadership ability of the people beneath you.
That's interesting. This is such a broad topic, and I refer our listeners to the link that we have in our podcast here. It's an article in Inc. magazine, 5 Great Reasons Why You Should Get an Executive Coach. It's an excellent article. It's published back in 2016. It's timeless, and it really gets into number 2, which is talking about accountability. And David, I think that's one of the things where everybody needs it, not everybody can accept it. And so I have a goal. And I have an objective, like I want to lose weight, but I really can't pass Chick-fil-A because their chocolate shakes are so good. So here's a goal, which is I've got clarity on my goal, but I really need accountability. So how much accountability is involved in coaching? And I don't want to get in confidence in just a minute, but accountability.
Primary accountability is huge. And tying this back over to your other question about a master coach, as what to expect from a master coach, accountability is essential. And a master coach is going to help you stay accountable. We don't want a coach who promises to hold you accountable per se. That type of coaching won't help you grow at all. You'll always be dependent upon the coach for your accountability. Now, there's room for that, especially in the beginning, but a master coach brings you into a system of structure, a system of support where you build that desire and discipline that you want to where you want to be now be accountable to yourself and also to help you understand the extremely high cost of excuses so that you can keep moving forward. Even when the coach is, you develop a discipline that you're now starting accountability where you're going to bring in focus and clarity. At the end of the day, David, you can have results or you can have excuses, not both.
That's right. I love that. Give us a success story that you can share with our listeners where you help them bring clarity and then through accountability, you really increase their confidence, which is the third point in this article that I really like.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I have a couple of two clients and they're in the wind energy sector. In fact, they are wind energy recruiters and they're a startup, two outstanding 30-something young men, engineering backgrounds. One of them is actually a wind energy technician who, to follow his dream, stepped out of his job of one of, shall we say, a job of stability with a regular paycheck and benefits and all the things that we think are certain and do that to create a wind energy recruiting company. And it was summer of 2019. They had engaged me because they were in trouble. What had happened was they had gotten, shall we say, upside down with a vendor, $95,000. The company was offering to buy them and they would forgive the debt, and these guys would then bring their recruiting business into this company. By me asking questions that a lot of times people don't want to be asked, one is to, why did you start this company to begin with? If you believe that your company is only worth $95,000, you're the highest and best authority on what to do with your business. However, I believe that you started this company for a reason a lot more than just $95,000, and that your company has value and that you have value. You have values of leaders. You're providing opportunity for countless people across the country in the wind energy business.
Right.
If you believe that you're only worth that, then that's fine. They saw the error of their thinking. They shifted it around. In 2019, they actually ended up in the black. And when COVID hit, they had a very brief hiccup, some contracts canceled, picked up 6 days later, 5 days later, and they're on track this year to make even more than last year because they know they have value.
Yeah.
And they know that they're adding value to people. And I just finished up with them. I'll just call it a mini strategic planning session, and they'll bust $500,000 in 2021 without even thinking about it. In fact, they're probably holding back a little bit. But they had to get clarity and focus on why they were in that business, what motivated them, and what they were doing to add value to people, to bring people into the renewable energy sector.
And that really helped them overcome their internal negative self-talk, which
and,
is one
and
of
that's exactly what it was, David.
Yeah. It's inhibitors of our own success is our own self-talk, what we let go on in our own head.
Yeah. And what so often happens is that the business owner, company CEO, a mortgage company CEO, it doesn't matter, is that there are so many conditions and circumstances and situations go on around us that if allowed, what you do will be dictated by conditions, circumstances, and situations. This is about not letting conditions and circumstances have you. This is about you getting your head around and your heart around what it is that you would love, regardless of conditions and circumstances. You know, I remember back when we brought you on, we knew that the Dodd-Frank bill was going to be tough. Oh, my God, it's going to kill us. No, it's not. We got our arms around it. We got our heads around it. We got our hearts around it, and we whipped it. And that's the same thing that's going on right now. This constant state of improvement. The first thing that has to improve is the leader.
Yeah.
Nothing improves until the leader improves.
And what's going on in that leader's head. And that's why you have
exactly.
a coach. And that, and the importance of that. Every time we get to this topic, the time just flies. We've got 8 minutes left. You know, when someone's listening to this, they go, we need to select a coach. We need to find one. But there are a lot of amateurs out there that really shouldn't be in the business. And God bless them. And hopefully they'll find their way to success in it and learn and grow. But for those listening, say, you know what? I would like to explore what would be the process they go about to find the right coach for them.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is my own website, self-serving motive there, but it's probably one of the most easily Googleable things that you can find. And so you've got to start somewhere. Executive coach, leadership coaches, you can find that anywhere. But the thing that I would really say in this, David, is to wherever you land on that, is to understand that coaching is a sacred relationship, regardless of who you talk to. And it may take many to talk to, is to understand that there are always two sets of expectations, yours and the coach's. Mm-hmm. And until you can bring those expectations to mutual, you have a gap.
Right.
And that gap is called disappointment. And that's what we seek to avoid. And so having conversations as to values is, I believe, to be very important. That because you can have mutual values or shared values. I'll back this up and say, you know, to close that gap, you get it closed. The adhesive bond that keeps that gap from opening back up is called accountability.
Someone just wrote me, okay, what's his website? I want to go to it. They want to check it out. What's the website, David?
Yeah, davidnorrisleadership.com.
Let me check it out. There's such great amount of information there, and you will not be disappointed if you choose to get a hold of David and have him coach you. You know, I think the thing you hit on, which is the most important thing, criteria in selecting a coach, is you have to absolutely feel that they care about you And that has to be demonstrated in numerous ways. And there's a lot of people say, oh, I care about you. I want to see you sick. But it's the questions they ask. And are they thinking about you when you're not online and on the phone with them or however you're in a Zoom meeting over there? Do they really, really care about you? And then I think the other thing you talked about, David, I want to just underscore is alignment. There is such a challenge finding people that really are aligned. You may need a consultant in some cases, and you may need a coach in another area, or there's a combination such as what I do a lot of the times. And I think it's so important to have that. But the number one thing, make sure that they care about you. And
yes, sir. That is the main thing right there, more than anything, is that they care about people.
We got some questions coming in from our listeners, David, so let's get through a couple of them right now.
Okay.
So the first one, which is the most recent question hitting on that same point, is, okay, how do I tell they care? They're all going to say, I care, and I want to, but what are some ways you can recognize that they care?
Look for the high personal standards and ambitions through tangible results that clients have achieved.
I think in the conversation you're having with them, there's that sense, this person really asked me questions. I try to ask questions, and that's what you did for me when we started working together. You asked me a lot of questions, and I think it was around the responses I gave you, you got a sense that I was going to be great to be working for you with. Now, that was a consulting relationship. Again, the same thing applies to consulting in this particular case, is you got to make sure you have the knowledge on it, but there's just got to be, I just seemed like I clicked with that person. I just seemed like they got it.
Yes, there's a lot of intuition involved as to not just what you're thinking, but what you're feeling about it, and that you're going to know that this is someone that you can trust and be vulnerable with.
Yeah, there you went to a place. And then how do you tell if you can be vulnerable with them? Is, are they vulnerable? And one of the things that I love about our conversations, David, is you're always demonstrating how vulnerable you are. And you use examples, and sometimes those examples are about areas where you've made a mistake or anyone has made a mistake. I mean, but you're vulnerable and you speak from those places, because when we go through like a butterfly coming out of a cocoon, how it gets its fluid into the wings is by going through those really narrow spots that literally pushes the fluid from that chunky brown caterpillar, and it won't fly unless you go through those tight places. And I think when we go through those tight places of life, David, that's where we grow. And also we get that transformative effect.
I think there's also a misconception about coaching out there that a coach has to be perfect. And I think this may even address the question. If a coach had to be perfect, I couldn't be a coach. It just wouldn't happen. And nobody besides that, I don't think anybody can really have seen or met a perfect coach or anything like that. But I would just say that a coach should be trained, experienced, and recommended. And when I say experienced, now we're going to talk the vulnerable right there. I have so many mistakes, failures, mess ups, screw ups, foul ups from my Marine Corps days all the way through today. But the thing, the difference is, it's not just experience. It's, and this is something that I help my clients with, and what other master coaches do, is that, you know, experience isn't the best teacher. It's the evaluated experience that's the best teacher. And that willingness to be vulnerable.
When you said evaluated, in other words, did you go back and learn anything from the mistake? It's not just that you made a mistake, but did you evaluate that, and did you learn anything? And then what did you learn? And I think that's a great question to be asking someone. When that happened, what did you learn from it? Oh, never do that again.
That's very easily said, but trust me, the habitual thinking will lead you right back down that same path. So.
Boy, now we're getting into the good stuff and we're out of time. Man, this conversation went way, way too quickly. And I know there's others that are going to want to talk to you, David. And again, they can go to your website, davidnorrisleadership.com. And someone just said, where's he located? Amarillo, Texas.
We're not the edge of the earth, but we can see it from here.
I love it. David, it's so good to have you on here. I appreciate
Thank you, David. It's so good to be here, man. It's good to hear your voice.
It is such a joy, and I appreciate who you are. Be sure to say hi to Candy, your wife. She's such a special lady. And that's another thing is, what are you, having success in your personal life? Ask your coach, folks, are you happily married? How long have you been married? Because if you're not successful at home, you're not going to be successful out there in the market. We all struggle with it, but it's, you know, different times in various areas of our personal lives. But it's those that stay and stick with their commitments. And it's really fun. I just celebrate your marriage and what a wonderful commitment you've made to Candy and how wonderful, how well that's worked out for you. So, David, such a joy to have you here, friend, today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David. It's my pleasure.
You bet. We've had as our guest today a very good friend of mine, David Norris. And you will want to check out his website, davidnorrisleadership.com. Encourage you to at least pick up the phone and have a conversation with him. You will learn something. Every time I get on the phone with him, I learn something and I grow. You've got to reach out and start the conversations. And I can't recommend anyone better to go start the conversation I'm coaching with than David Norris. Again, David, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, sir.
Folks, next week we're going to have Don Williams on talking about the conference that has now started. And I'm going to go over to that conference right now. So we're going to be exiting stage right here immediately so we can get over to this conference and the first virtual conference of its kind, the MBA, our annual conference. We miss so many, many, many people out there. We'd love to see all of you, and we will be getting together again soon. But let's get together and support this industry. And specifically, I think the heart and soul of the industry is what the MBA is representing to us. They do a great job. Be sure to get registered. If you haven't already, get out and register. It's not too late. You can participate and then you get copies. The nice thing about being a virtual conference is the sessions you miss, you can then come back and download and listen again. So be sure to come back here next week, folks. Appreciate you all. A special thank you goes out to our sponsors, of course, the MBA, Finastra, CMLA, Indicom, Incelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility RE, Modex, and so many more. Go check them out in our advertising sponsor page on our website, LincolnOnLending.com. Have a great week, everybody, and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.